As George Bush and the American government beat the drums of war and prepare for an unprovoked attack on Iraq and its people, opposition is building to the American-led war on terrorism throughout the world. For years, the United Nations has imposed economic sanctions on Iraq, which have led to the death of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, documented throughout the world by human rights and social justice organizations. But the new threat of war adds to the plight of the Iraqi people. The civilian deaths which would take place would only further the misery and suffering imposed on Iraq by Western governments. As the anniversary of the first bomb being dropped on Afghanistan approaches, organizations, groups, and individuals throughout the United States will be taking to the streets to oppose the war on terrorism. The demonstrations will be under the banner of Not in Our Name, as people throughout America are standing up to say no to an attack on Iraq and no to the war on terrorism. We spoke with Soji Johnson, an activist and organizer with Not in Our Name, based in San Francisco, about the upcoming National Day of Action against the war on terrorism.
Our group started only about 6 months ago, and really from a felt need that in this country there were millions of people who were not being represented in the White House, whose voice was not being represented in the cries for war, and that we needed to find the forums to really speak for those people. And our campaign started with trying to bring some tools and contributions to the movement, and three kind of things came out of that. One is we developed a pledge to resist, and that's off. There's a lot of history in this country with pledges and around Central America of really trying to get people to commit, to step forward. And we really found in writing this and reaching out to artists and activists, we really found something that could connect with people, because it seemed that after September 11th, people were a bit worried, and we needed to pull them out of their holes and have them come back again and confront, well, what do I believe? What do I value? What do I think is right and wrong? And if I have values that I believe in, and then aren't I compelled to act on them? And really, our pledge is that kind of it's that kind of compulsion. You have to say it, and you look at it, and then you have to act on it. And that's one of the things we really built around. And you know, it starts with, you know, as people living in the United States, it is our responsibility to resist the injustices done by our government in our names, not in our name. And that's really what we're trying to do, is we're trying to get people by their minds to really cross that line and choose a side, because I think that people think, well, if I can just stay in the middle, if I can just, this will blow over, the pendulum will swing back, and, you know, this is just a really, really bad nightmare. And we're actually here to say, no, it's not, you know, and as much as we can't want to sound the alarm that, you know, what's happening to the civil rights in this country is unprecedented. What's happening to Arabs and Muslims and South Asians in this country is unprecedented. You know, what's going on with, you know, the troops movement around the world, that this is the biggest threat against the world in the history of mankind, frankly. And it is cause for alarm, and it is time for people to act. And we really want to draw people in this country forward to say, listen, I am gonna side against my government. When George Bush gets up and says, you're with us or you're against us, we really want people to say, I'm against you. And it's hard because they, you know, they're really playing on our emotions. They wave flags and they show us pictures of little kids. They, you know, they're really kind of trying to build a sense of patriotic unity, and we're all in this together. This is our country, you know, right or wrong, love it or leave it. And we really want to say that those are not the terms. The terms are, do you think it's wrong to bomb innocent people? Do you think it's wrong to racially profile people and round them up, deport them, lock them up because of their ethnicity, nationality, or their religion? Do you think it's right or wrong to spy on people, to arrest lawyers, and to do away with that very idea of dissent or free speech in this country and the right to protest? And if you think those things are wrong, then you have an obligation to stand against it.
And when we're talking about confronting the war on terrorism, right now around the world, people are bracing for the pending attack on Iraq. So can you speak about the situation in the United States right now? What's your sense in terms of people's resistance to this attack on Iraq, and also kind of the beating of the war drums that's going on?
You know, it's the odd thing in this country is that you'd be hard-pressed to really find a lot of people who support this war. I think you know, a while ago they were doing polls, and I remember I read one in the San Francisco Chronicle, and it said that 9 out of 10 people supported the war, which to me was preposterous. But I think, you know, the poll would more likely show, even if they did one, would be 9 out of 10 people are freaked out about what their government is doing and really don't know what to do about it. And I think that's where we are. There's a lot of people in this country who are don't want this, that are scared, that are afraid, that want to resist, that are really looking for and waiting for the movement to step onto the stage. And I think that it's been a bit difficult coming out of the haze of September of so much defensiveness, so much feeling of not having moral authority to really speak, considering those who died. And I feel that, you know, it's been a year, and as activists, we're really having to confront, all right, what has happened in this past year? How many people have been murdered because of what this government is doing? What, you know, what has been the human cost of what's happening? And confronting that, I think that we have to, in a way that we haven't to date, step onto the political stage and do something that's really going to capture the attention of people. All the people that are riding the buses and on the BART train, they're watching TV and are like, oh God, I wish somebody would do something. We have to step out there so that they can feel the freedom and the space to come out and do something as well. And so I think in this country, that nobody, very few people really want this war. You know, there's, of course, people who are just knee-jerk, believe the hype and stuff that like that. But most people, I mean, there's no connection between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. And it's very clear that, you know, what they're doing now has nothing to do with September in New York. You know, it has everything to do with, you know, people recognize there's oil in the Persian Gulf. You know, people recognize, you know, some very simple features of what's happening. And I think on October 6th, we want to, as a movement, converge in some very key cities like New York City, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and others, and really bring together all fragmented, all parts and streams of the movement to come and make a powerful statement that we stand united. We stand united, pacifists and anarchists. We stand united, you know, Democrats and communists. We stand united with all streams of the movement, from the Quakers to the socialists to the students and youth to the old generation, that, you know, as one people, we are dedicating ourselves to fighting this. So the mood in this country that I can see is really one of waiting for people to take that stage. And I think, you know, it's a bit symbiotic, because the movement really needs to know that those people are out there to support them. And I think that because of the assault that's happened on the media and the really sort of attempt to portray this country as sort of united around what's going on, a lot of activists feel really isolated. And so we've really been trying hard to take people out into the streets. You know, I work with youth, and we do a guerrilla theater workshop, and one of the things we wanted to do was to go on the BART trains, and that's the metro or the subway trains here in San Francisco. And, you know, it's rush hour, and the trains are packed with people, and we went on the trains, and we wore black shirts that said, "Our grief is not a cry for war," and we handed out flyers, and we did poetry, we talked to people, and on the public transit, and, you know, people, so many people came to us and just said, good job, thank you, thank you, thank you. And until you get out there and you get a feel for what people are really thinking, I think it's easy to feel alone. But once you get out there and you see all the love that you get for taking a bold stand, I think it gives you the sense of power to go out and do more. And that's what we're hoping to do on two levels on October 6th. Is one, for ourselves, show ourselves how powerful we are by converging in our thousands, but also show the people in this country and in the world, you know, that right here there are people willing to stand up for this and willing to build a movement. And October 7th has, on that Monday, the actual anniversary of the bombing of Afghanistan, we really want to project in a way that, you know, rivals the way that September 11th anniversary is projected. And so, you know, they really brought out in a very... No, I mean, they painted every single television, every single channel with the same message, you know. Grief is a cry for war. Grief is a cry for war. Remember those who died and support the war. And we really want to, in the biggest way we can on the 7th, say, you know, grief is a cry for mass resistance, protest, civil disobedience, screaming out loud, taking over your campuses, marching in the streets, writing letters, singing songs. I mean, really that we need to build a movement that's powerful enough and determined enough and forceful enough to really go against our government. And we have to recognize what our government is. Our government is the biggest superpower in the world. Our government does have the biggest mass arsenal, weapons of mass destruction in the world. Our government has used those weapons. Our government is threatening all the peoples of the earth with destruction and domination. And, you know, and if we're going to fight that, we're going to have to do it in a variety of different ways, and some of those ways are going to have to be very determined and forceful. So on the 7th, we are organizing for mass civil disobedience in the streets to really stop business as usual, because we think that the movement needs to take a leap. You know, it's becoming more and more clear, the more countries that the U.S. targets and the more soldiers they put on foreign soil, that they're not just out there to go after Al-Qaeda or various Muslim extremist groups. That, I mean, frankly, the same Muslim Islamic extremists that they themselves funded and created, but they're actually going there to crush movements of the people. And I think that's most telling in the Philippines, for instance, where there is a small group of Abu Sayyaf and Islamic militants that pose little to no threat to the Filipino government. But yet and still, the U.S. has put hundreds of troops on that soil and sent millions of dollars to the Filipino government to arm and train their army to go after these handful of guerrillas. And what's become more and more clear to the Filipino people, and I think they recognize this from the start, is that there are Filipino revolutionaries in the mountains of the Philippines, the People's Army of the Philippines. They're Maoists, and they're fighting a government basically sold out to the United States. They're fighting for the land of their people. They're fighting to stop their country from being turned into another military base in the U.S. empire. They're fighting for self-determination of a nation free of U.S. imperialism. And I think the U.S. recognizes there are wars of liberation from the Philippines to Nepal to Peru to Colombia, and as part of its new world order that they are intent on enforcing, a necessity is going to have to be crushing those movements. Just as in this country, we've seen Ashcroft and the entire machinery of this government not focused on protecting anyone from anything, but really focused on crushing dissent and crushing the movements of the people and the ability to protest and fight back against all this. The same is happening on the world scale, is that if you are going to steamroller over the peoples of the world, if you were going to declare yourself the single empire that exists and take for yourself all the resources, then you are going to have to do away with any kind of opposition. And I think they are really making a mad grab for power based on what happened in September 11th. And part of that is to, as much as possible, win people to crush these movements. And how are they doing this? Well, they're using their ability to define who is and who is not a terrorist as one of the major tools in that, and they've done that. The People's Army of the Philippines have been labeled terrorists now. The Nepalese revolutionaries have been labeled terrorists. The Colombian insurgency has been labeled terrorists. And so, you know, now they're not fighting against the struggle, movements of liberation, just struggles of the people that it would be undeniable for people in the 60s around the Vietnam War. Now they're fighting terrorists, and we really have to, as a movement in this country, and I think it's a much easier for people around the world because they have a much better understanding of what this country does to the world, but to build our movement in a way that really supports and defends, or at least opens up space for people to support and defend those movements of liberation, and really does not allow our government to set the terms of what we can and cannot support. What defines good protest and bad protest? What defines good struggles and bad struggles? Because they will more and more divide us up amongst our ranks. They will divide us up into those people who use violence and those who don't use violence, those people who are good Americans and those people who are treasonous, you know, those people who are enemy combatants and others who are loyal, you know, and so on. And we really do have to... We have to challenge our government on every front, and in as much as they are going after and trying to target and attack these movements, we have to bring them more to the forefront of the struggle. I think, you know, one of the ways that they cut off support for movements in other countries is they just don't let people know anything about them. And I think the more people learn about these movements in the third world for liberation and these armed struggles, the more people support them, because the more they would recognize what a good thing it is that people are getting organized in these countries to fight U.S. imperialism and to fight their countries basically being oppressed and dominated by the U.S. And it's having direct repercussions in this country, because what happens is, because of the Anti-Terrorism Act that was passed after the Oklahoma City bombing, which was done by a white man, and there was, of course, no mass arrest detention of white men in this country, but because of that, they passed a law that says it is illegal to support in any way terrorist organizations in other countries, which means that groups like Bayan here in America would support the Filipino revolutionaries. They can be labeled terrorists, and their membership can be labeled terrorist, and they can be, you know, jacketed as enemy combatants and sent to Guantanamo or held indefinitely or deported or, you know, fall under one of the many thousands of provisions of the USA Patriot Act. And I think people don't realize that, you know, that doing the same things which were, you know, maybe almost innocuous in the 60s of supporting the right of the Vietnamese people to liberate themselves is now illegal and is now caused to be jacketed and targeted as terrorists and, you know, to be treated, you know, in the same way as Jose Padilla in this country is being treated, in the same way that John Walker Lynn was treated. And we really have to fight against that, because what they're really saying is that the people of the world have no right to resist what's happening. And if there was ever a time for peoples in other countries, especially in the third world, to rise up and resist against U.S. aggression, now is the time, and we really have to defend those. And so I think they play on each other. You know, the more we learn about these struggles, the more inspired we are to defend them and to take to the streets ourselves. And the more our struggles are taking to the streets and, you know, and supporting those struggles, the more freedom they have to not be crushed in silence. And the more difficult it is for this government, which claims for itself the mantle of democracy, the mantle of human rights, the mantle of peace, freedom, and all those kind of things, the more difficult it is for them to openly crush democratic movements of the people, you know, and I think, you know, that's a very important aspect of what we're trying to do.
That was an interview with Soji Johnson, an activist with Not In Our Name, a coalition of organizations and groups throughout America who are mobilizing against the pending attack on Iraq and the war on terrorism. For more information on Not In Our Name, visit www.notinourname.org. For current news and analysis about the climate and context of the war on terrorism, visit www.zmag.org and www.indymedia.org. This interview was produced for CKUT Radio Montreal by Stefan Christophe.